Escape Pod 122. September 6th, 2007. Today's story, Transcendence Express, by Yetzi DeVries.
Hello, and welcome to Escape Pod. I'm Steve Ely. My apologies if this intro is short. I'm still in recovery from DragonCon. Trying to do a daily podcast and still keep a good social pace at the convention wiped me out a bit. And, yeah, let's talk about DragonCon. The first thing is, DragonCon is getting bigger every year. It's the biggest fan media convention anywhere, and the place was packed with amazing costumes and people gawking at the amazing costumes and celebrities and fans and tens of thousands of people, all waiting, as usual, for the same hotel elevator at the same time. It's an amazing spectacle, and it's really a bit too big and chaotic for me. That's my impression. It may not be yours. I think my natural con size is one like Balticon or most world cons. A few thousand folks. Enough to make new friends, but with enough room that you can hear them talk. But I did have a lot of fun. What I noticed is that as the convention gets bigger, my own experience of it gets smaller and deeper. I didn't see a lot of panels or hit any of the major con events. I went to some parties staged by people I knew, and of course the Escape Pod listener meetup, which was a blast, thanks to everyone I got to meet there. But most of my time was spent with just a few people I care about, either walking the con or finding quiet places. One of the highlights of the convention was simply sitting down Sunday evening with Minx and another couple, and having a real conversation about real things. Did we miss things while we did that? Yes, we did, but I don't regret them. For me, cons are about people, and the way I survive a con this big is to find people I connect with and face the chaos with these people beside me. Maybe you're the same way, or maybe not. The virtue of a con this diverse is that if you're open to making friends, you can definitely find them. And I feel very lucky for all the friends I spent time with there. If you want my full con report with pictures, you can find it at sfely.livejournal.com. I will warn you that it's longer than some Escape Pod stories. And speaking of, this week we're pleased to present Transcendence Express, a piece that takes a different, bottom-up view of the singularity, by Yetzi DeVries. Mr. DeVries lives in the Netherlands and works as a technical specialist for a propulsion company. He's had stories published in Clark's World magazine, Amityville House of Pancakes, and Nemonymous. Yeah, that. And he's on the editorial staff of one of my two favorite UK magazines, Interzone. This story first appeared in my other favorite UK magazine, Hub, at the beginning of this year. The story is read for us by Jack Mangan of Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. You'll be able to guess why it's called that. He's the author of the podcast novel Spherical Tomy and the hilarious Duel of the Fates series, pitting sci-fi heroes against each other. You can find him at jackmangan.com. So start winding your $100 laptop. It's story time.
Transcendence Express by Yetzi DeVries. 1. Daybreak in a little village in the Zambian Highlands. She's teaching maths and science at the village high school. The school itself puts the word derelict to shame, a building so run down, our own country squatters would find it uninhabitable. Windows are an illusion, walls that are more crack than brick, benches that should be reported to Amnesty's Human Rights Watch, and a roof that doubles as a communal shower in the wet season. She writes large letters on a shabby blackboard. Her class, slowly getting used to the sight of a freckled redhead whose skin is shining from the liberally applied sunblock, starts to give more attention to the teachings than the teacher. Hard to believe she's really doing this and enjoying it. Stranger still that she took a whole year off from one of the world's premier scientific projects. Most baffling, though, is the project she's taking up with her class. At first, everybody, me included, thought it was a strange after-class hobby thing involving manual skills. Carving wood, something she's not terribly apt at, so she goaded the local sculptor into helping her and the children out with the practical parts. Making a flat, laptop-sized wooden box with a hinged cover. Each child making her or his own. So far, so good, so innocent. Then she told her school kids they were going to fill their boxes up with something special, layer after layer. She made two large vats, filled them with certain secret ingredients, let them stand for a couple of days so that they would grow full, and then added salt to one and zinc sulfide to the other until both solutions were saturated. Right now, they're applying the first layer. "Miss," one of her class asks, "why we do this?" "You have to say, why are we doing this, Timmy?" She could be a bit bitchy in class, too. "Why are we doing this, miss?" Timmy rolls his eyes but complies. "Because, if we follow the instructions carefully, these boxes will become your window to the world and beyond." Which leaves me wondering, but those young kids can be very sharp. "Like your laptop computer, miss?" A large-eyed girl with knobby knees. "Very good, Melissa. Only better and on a purely biological basis." "Really, miss?" Neither the class nor I believe our ears. "I know this sounds too good to be true. We will need several months and we will have to be very careful. But if we follow the instructions and do our very best, we might succeed." A mix of skepticism and expectancy from the class. Leona saying you sometimes need to do crazy things to get even crazier results. I can't believe it. That same night in our barracks, I can't hide my disappointment. "How can you do it?" "Do what?" With that semi-innocent look, saying she knows exactly what I mean. "Saddle those poor kids up with illusions. Biological laptops my arse." Uh-oh. That smile. "You'll be surprised." Unpleasantly surprised. "But your class will be devastated." "They won't be. David, you have to trust me on this." "Trust you? Some of these kids may believe in magic, but I don't." "The magic we're developing here is of the technological kind, the one so advanced as to be indistinguishable." "Something's going on, and I haven't got a clue, right?" "David, I'm walking a fine line here. I'd like to tell you more, but for the moment, it's better if you don't know." "Is this illegal?" "I don't want..." "Depends on your definition of legal. About as legal as achieving patent rights in the genome of certain tropical plants that indigenous people have used for their curing properties from times immemorial. Trust me, I'm doing the right thing." "The right thing. Remember the world changer? I'll tell you more as soon as we have some Bicos running." "Biko? As in Steve Biko, the activist?" "That's a good one. Very appropriate. Thank you." Then she kisses me and does all those things that make further talk impossible. In the upcoming unrest, I let it rest. A. Nightfall, 3 months ago, in a small town in the Dutch lowlands. Utter silence in a university lab. The lights were on. The QPP ran 24 hours a day. One solitary volunteer kept watch over the experimental setup during the night. Leona Jansen, one of the project scientists, typed furiously on the keyboard of the QPP interface, while in the pauses between her dazzling finger work, she watched the monitor. Nothing she did showed up on any official record. The quantum processor project was one of the many experiments trying to achieve quantum computing. While competing researchers used different approaches, the line of attack in Leona's lab comprised Bose-Einstein condensates of several thousand rubidium atoms, forming a single quantum entity, quantum dots. Ahead of the competition, Leona's team had the first practical quantum processor up and running. Factorizing incredible numbers, it not only proved that it worked, but brought in extra money for further research by selling its quantum encryption keys. It became so high in demand that it was kept running around the clock. But apart from abstract mathematical theorems and complex physical problems, the QPP was crunching some decidedly different numbers in the wee hours of night. A smile appeared on Leona's face. Sound filled the room, music appropriate to the chill outside. Ambient noises, like cold northern winds blowing over desolate snowy plains. An audible crack slowly increasing to a breaking rumble, like an Arctic ice shelf toppling into the ocean. Muffled footsteps of mad Inuits performing break dances in a polar landscape. Perceptions shatter, truths break, reality takes on a different take. consciousness of a new kind enters the emperor's mind. A bit of yearning, two trifles excess, a ton of learning, transcendence express.
Aura Aurora.
The Eskimo experimentalists with their latest take on the world. So test two, a copy of her home expert system. You still dislike them? Well, I kind of like this one, Leona admitted.
The more minimal their music, the stranger their lyrics.
Since when do expert systems have opinions? According to the philosophers, I don't. I'm just reflecting your own thoughts in a warped way, acting as a sounding board. Really? Anyway, I dig these words. 2. Afternoon, somewhere in Zambia. I can't believe it. Some of those biological computers seem to work. How does she do it? The screens come to life and give the kids instructions for testing the keyboard and mouse. Some kids are less lucky and have badly functioning or even completely dead BECOs, as Leona calls them. At first, Leona is too excited about the BECOs that are working to notice the disappointment of the unfortunate kids, until the increasing cries of frustration become so loud that even Leona, who can exist in a little bubble of her own when focused, cannot fail to hear them. Give it to her, she handles it like she's been a high school teacher all her life. Gives her own, apparently functioning, unit to the most upset kid, and immediately soothes the other unhappy ones. Quickly makes them join those with working BECOs, expertly making compatible teams. Then it's not long before little groups of 2 and 3 are fully absorbed in the wonders of working with these biological laptops. Unable to keep my distance, I walk up to 3 classmates interacting with one such a BECO. The pictures are fuzzy, the colors ill-defined, and the reaction time tediously slow. However, the letters appearing are large and easily readable, and after all 3 kids have been asked to introduce themselves, the program equally divides its attention to each of them, making them take turns while the other 2 can effortlessly follow what's going on. But man, is it slow. The display makes your eyes water and would have any Western whiz kid tuning the screen properties like crazy. Still, the real wonder is that those pell-mell constructions are doing anything at all. Furthermore, those African kids have nothing to compare them with, so are uncritically happy with what they've got. As dinner time closes in, Leona has to wrestle most kids away from their new toys and promises that first thing tomorrow, they will, after school hours, start making new BECOs, so that eventually every classmate will have one. The whole class cheers, and Leona's smile doesn't leave her face for the rest of the evening. Of course, I'm full of questions, but she diverts my attention with a touch of innuendo that makes Viagra look like a spark in a forest fire. How did she get all that lingerie and those, well, toys in such a small travel bag? As my rabbit breeding instinct overwhelms my monkey curiosity, the last vestiges of my rationality hope for some explanation later on. More, stringent matters require hard attention first. In the following days, my bafflement only increases. Those crazy BECOs seem to improve over time. The screen colors become bright and sharp, the pictures crisp and clear, and the way they speed up is the most incredible thing of all. Their responses become so fast as to be instantaneous, and then they begin to multitask. Haltingly at first, but with a growing confidence that seems superhuman. Animations appear that would make any Mac freak drool. Calculations finish so fast, it would make any supercomputer programmer cringe, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. Those BECOs have a voice input as well, but that's the hardest part to get working. However, by the time it does function, it effortlessly recognizes individual voices. Then, it reacts to all 3 kids talking at once, separately or in concert as the situation requires, with no discernible time lag and an increasing appropriateness that is eerie to watch. The BECO divides its screen in precise parts aimed at each kid, tailoring its reaction speed and presentation to each individual. Furthermore, these kids adapt so easy in turn that they only use the keyboard or mouse in very unclear cases and talk to the BECO as if it's the most normal thing in the world. If that is hard to conceive, then get this. Each BECO interacts with its group of children like an ideal combination of loving parent, wise uncle and sharp aunt, patient teacher, and best friend. Well, not right away, of course, But after some initial faults and hiccups, it combines communicating, teaching, and mutual understanding to a level quite indistinguishable from telepathy. I've changed my shift in the hospital camp just to see what the hell is going on in Leona's class. Every night my wonderment grows until Leona's devious delaying tactics can no longer contain it. Eventually, halfway through a bout of sloppy lovemaking, my heart isn't in it, my mind isn't in it. Actually, only one part of me is. She indulges me. Leona, what the hell is going on? What you see? I'm giving these kids the education they deserve, with the appropriate tools. Okay, so you're trying to do the impossible. Cram a whole high school education into these kids in a few months, and give them computers in the process. Not normal computers, biological quantum computers. What's the difference? Maybe it's better if I print out that file for you. Wait a minute. She walks to her BECO and comes back within a minute with a couple of printed pages. Can these crazy things print as well? Before I can ask, Leona thrusts the papers in my hands. Recipe for a biological quantum computer. Read-only quantum encrypted file. Quantum dots are not restricted to high-tech lab constructs. They can be made biochemically. For instance, certain genetically engineered viruses have a string of amino acids at one end that have an affinity for zinc sulfide. Add these viruses to a zinc sulfide solution so that tiny clusters of the material stick to them, then let the water of the solution evaporate. I read the file to the end, but understand less than a third of it. The gist of it, however, is but all too clear. Let me get this straight. Cutting through the technical mumbo-jumbo, this means you can make a biological quantum computer from ingredients that are available everywhere in the tropics. You can build computers without the technological infrastructure? Yes, and it's quite easy, too. Jesus, that's just too good to be true. It's happening. You're seeing it with your own eyes. This is absurd. Totally and absolutely crazy. But I can't deny what's happening with her class. She smiles benignly at my puzzled expression and gently strokes my chest hair. I have problems grasping these events, and more. But why? In Holland, you were the tunnel vision researcher. And here, you suddenly become a crossover between Florence Nightingale and Albert Schweitzer. You're exaggerating. I did care about broader issues, but in smaller ways. Imagine this. You try to do the right thing. You donate to Médecins Sans Frontières, Greenpeace, and Amnesty International. You vote for the Green Party. You buy fair trade products. You even work weekends in an Oxfam store, and you hope it's enough. Then you meet a guy, fall in love, and find out he's actually going to work as a volunteer in Africa. And you feel, how do I say, lacking. But I went here because I must, not to spite you. I know, darling, but I was torn. I love my work, especially the purely scientific part. But I love you as well, and I do share your concerns. Please don't get me wrong. If something bothers you, you're always itching to do something immediately. Me, well, I'm trying to look for deeper causes and long-term solutions. Me too, Leona. But long-term solutions need great changes, like breaking down the trade barriers, sharing wealth and knowledge with the third world. Most Westerners are not willing to do that. I agree. And it had me stumped. Until one night, I suddenly saw a different way.
3. Morning, somewhere in Zambia.
Meanwhile, Leona's class is getting weirder and weirder. The kids have mounted small mirrors in the classroom in such a way that all the BECOs have contact with each other through their infrared gates. So much is happening at the same time that in the ensuing pandemonium, it is unclear who is teaching whom. But one thing's for sure. There's a whole lot of interaction going on. The worn-out blackboard is left in a corner, abandoned. The whole shabby environment of the classroom seems forgotten. Leona and the kids are happily and actively living in a small bubble of their own. It's a fragile shell, though pierced by reality time and again. Like now, as Timmy comes back from lunch with his parents.
Miss, Dad won't listen to me,
he says with tears rolling down his cheeks. Leona picks him up, cuddles him, and kisses his forehead.
Shush, Timmy. Easy peasy.
As I watch her hugging this hurt child, I suddenly see the mother instead of the seductress, and I think crazy thoughts of marriage. She puts him down after he's calmed and asks what's up.
I tried to tell him he was doing it wrong, the way he's doing the farming.
Uh-oh, Leona tries to interrupt. But he says that is the only way to do it. Grandpa taught him, and Grandpa's dad taught Grandpa, and uh-oh.
Well, we found out a much better way with our long-term simulation programs, but he just... Ahem.
Leona's loud throat clearing finally breaks through Timmy's rant.
Yes, miss? Has it not occurred to you, Timmy, that you're going just a little bit too fast for your poor old dad? He's not old and not dumb, just so stubborn. Like you mean?
Timmy tries his best pout, but draws his out-thrust lower lip back in when the rest of the class begins to laugh. His semi-hurt look only lasts a fleeting moment as he receives friendly pokes from his mates and a fond stroke through his thick hair from Leona. A spark of defiance remains, though.
But what good is all this running best-choice scenarios when we don't use them?
You're right, Timmy, Leona says. But first people need to be convinced, and often that is the most difficult part of the job.
Oh, but how?
Well, I may have a little idea. Let's throw it into the group. I can't follow what happens next, as my work is calling me. In the evening, however, I try to get more information straight from the horse's mouth. In our typically untypical way, she wants to have sex while I just want to talk. Fortunately, she indulges me for the moment. What's with this simulation program? This long-term scenario thing?
Well, that's the thing our Bicos do extremely well.
What?
Because they're quantum computers, biological quantum computers...
Like the experimental setup you were working on back in Holland. But I thought your team was the first to achieve quantum computing. And now you tell me those BICOs can do it too?
Yes. BICO is my acronym for Biological Quantum Computer. And quantum computers are very apt at massive parallel calculations.
So?
You feed them all the known parameters of an existing situation. Then you apply several choices for changing that situation. Then the BICOs compute a near infinite number of likely scenarios, and give you a statistical breakdown of the most probable outcomes.
A future predictor? A quantum crystal ball?
Sort of. It gives you a good projection as to which solutions are most likely to work best in certain situations.
Like a hugely advanced version of SimCity. And what about the software you put in the BICOs? I've never seen such interactive programs. Where did you get those?
Those are not dead software programs, darling. They're AIs.
B. Very early morning, 4 months ago, somewhere in the Netherlands. An unknowing spectator might think that madness reigned in a certain university lab. A lone woman talking to herself, conversing into thin air. She got quite agitated at times, and her finely manicured hands cut through the air in sweeping, defiant gestures. Still, the intent way she stared at a large monitor seemed to suggest that she was actually getting answers.
So I need to start all over again when I get there? Build a BICO, set up a ubiquity kit, and nurse a new AI into self-awareness? But how about you? I can't leave you behind, and pulling the plug is murder. Can't I release you on the net? Yeah, I forgot. You need a quantum environment to maintain self-consciousness. Shit.
So there is a way?
Then this leaves me with one final question. I'm still not fully convinced that you and your fellow AIs will be benign. Because eventually you will be multitudes smarter than us, and you may find some higher principle that will make us obsolete.
At this, Leona sat down in front of the large monitor. With her right elbow on the desk, she put her chin in her hand as she watched the big screen. Written across it in eloquent script. If truly objective moral principles exist, then, by definition, they must be beneficial for all. 4. Late night, somewhere in Zambia. It's one of those nights again. While I can just about keep up with her physically and emotionally, I sometimes get completely left behind intellectually. Curiosity not only killed our little cat and mouse game, it overwhelmed my mind as well. Artificial intelligence? Isn't that another holy grail evading research teams all over the world?
So far, yes. That's because they're missing a fundamental ingredient.
Your secret touch.
Not really. The others don't have a working quantum computer.
What has that got to do with artificial intelligence?
Everything. According to Roger Penrose's very controversial, hypothesis, quantum processes in our brain's microtubules form an essential part of our consciousness. If he's right, then all attempts at creating self-awareness on normal computers are doomed. Then artificial intelligence can only arise on a quantum computer.
I didn't know your team was doing AI research as well.
We weren't. But during my lonely night shifts, I had quite some time at hand, so I experimented a little.
A little? You developed AI by fiddling around a wee bit? There's that smile again, with that naughty look when she's thinking of something kinky.
Hard to explain, darling. Let me just show you how good I am at fiddling with things.
At which point, she gets down to demonstrate just that. It's the kind of proof I never tire of. 5. The next morning. I've taken the morning off. Leona's revelation has piqued my curiosity to burning point. I need to see things for myself. Initially, the hubbub in her classroom is overwhelming. Too much going on at once. I sit down near Melissa and her friends, who are interacting with their Biko, and each other, almost at the same time. Somehow, they do notice me, and subtly I'm drawn into the maelstrom. Slowly, I'm seeing that there is a method to this madness, that there is order in this chaos. I guess knowing that those intuitive, almost telepathic programs running on the Bikos are actually AIs helps me make a bit more sense of the whole. Still, I'm worried about something. I can't help but ask Melissa, who seems wise beyond her years.
Melissa? Yes, Mr. David?
This is all wonderful, I begin, groping for words. But if Zambia and the rest of Africa become industrialized, the problems of the world as a whole will only increase.
How can you think we will do that, Mr. David? She says, bewildered. That is one of the worst scenarios we have ever run.
It is?
Of course. We can't believe that you people in the West are doing it. It is bad long-term strategy for yourselves, too.
Yeah, I guess most of us are just short-term egotists. But you people...
We have seen better ways. We would be stupid not to use them.
Which makes sense. If you know, deep in your bones, that it's bad, you will choose the long-term view. It's incredible. In this little world, the kids are not only learning fast, but trying to incorporate their lessons into reality as well. Of course, some kids develop faster than others, but there is this very strong sense of community, almost tangible, that makes the brighter ones help the others. There's a sort of selfless cooperation where each other's strengths and weaknesses are complemented, an invisible bond where the group as a whole truly cares for each of its own. It's as if Leona's class is transformed in a peculiar kind of group mind. The lessons becoming mind-bending sessions, where everything seems to happen at once. Kids learning new things, kids proposing new things, vehement discussions interspersed with laughter, dizzying sequences of sight and sound from the Bikos, and Leona madly gesturing and talking to everybody through her Biko, like the conductor of an orchestra in overdrive. It's like they're composing a different tune to some mystic rhythm, based upon that crazy Aura Aurora song.
Struggling on the oldest continent, the bereaved no longer stand alone. When the foothold is permanent, the seeds of change are sown. The tide is turning, more becoming less, curiosity burning, transcendence express. Epilogue, a few months later.
In the summer heat, a tired black man returns to his home after a long, hard day of working the land. He's dog-tired and suppresses his anticipation. While today is a special day, it's better not to expect too much, if only to avoid disappointment. His wife is cooking his favorite dish, cardamom, a rich stew of yams, onions, paprikas, and tomatoes. His kids gather around him, ready to celebrate. But they wait and let his oldest son come forward. The smart kid is smiling broadly and hiding something behind his back. I made something for your birthday, Dad.
So kind of you, Timmy, the large man says, still sweating from his exertions. What is it?
Something to help you plan your work, Timmy says, eyes gleaming. A computer.
A tall white guy and a petite red-headed woman are walking through a little village that is bustling with happy activity, abuzz with new wonders and alight with hope.
Leona acknowledges the scene as if it's the most normal thing in the world. But David still has trouble believing the evidence of his eyes. I can't believe the progress that's been made here. If this keeps up, we'll be unnecessary here in a couple of years. Isn't that the greatest kind of job? The sort where you eventually make yourself superfluous? But then we're unemployed. Not quite. The world is a very large place. I've always wanted to go deep into the Amazon jungle and explore the Bangladeshi marshlands.
Doesn't Médecins Sans Frontières need any volunteers there?
And that was our story. By the way, that organization mentioned in the final paragraph, Médecins Sans Frontières, I'm sorry, Minx, I know you tried to help me with that, is known in the U.S. as Doctors Without Borders. We've had authors request to send their payment to them in the past. They are one of the most respectable charities in the world, sending medical workers to countries that desperately need them. And I'm going to link them here because they can always use your help. So, feedback for Escape Pod 119, Aliens Want Our Women. This seems to have been the most controversial story we've done in a long time. There were people who thought it was good fun. Anka Wonka liked that it presented a woman who very straightforwardly got what she wanted. Roni said, "If fun is still Escape Pod's number one selection criterion, this smart and playful story is one of the best qualified so far." And Atara thought it was more of a popcorn story. Good fluff, not a lot of substance. However, they seem far outnumbered by the people, both male and female, who felt the story was far too sexist. Many thought it felt too much like classic science fiction, and not in a good way, when all the women were cardboard stereotypes. Pink Shift had some very strong reactions, and asked the provocative question of whether we'd find the story's gender-based humor quite so funny if it were racial humor instead. On the pro side, Biscuit thought this was a pro-feminist story because it did revolve around empowered and aggressively honest women. And Mr. Tweedy managed to bring two perspectives to the table. He initially posted it was misogynist, and then his wife thought he was taking it too seriously and that it worked pretty well as satire. The quote of the week comes from Simeon, who said, and by the way, this is an R-rated quote, "So, the moral of the story is, men on Earth are so lame, and the alternatives of boxes of chocolate and fresh batteries so unsatisfying, that the women of Earth, not lucky enough to be lesbians, are going to figure out interstellar travel just to get some better dick. Wow." Escape Pod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is distributed on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please feel free to share our files with your friends, as long as you don't charge money or sex for them, or try to change them. The files, that is, not your friends. If you like what you're hearing, we hope you'll blog about us or tell your friends, and we highly encourage you to donate via the PayPal button on our site, escapepod.org. We also hope you'll check out our horror podcast, Pseudopod, at pseudopod.org, and buy some collectible CDs from us at poddisc.com. Watch for our fantasy podcast, Podcastle, at podcastle.org, launching in October. It's been a couple weeks since we've done a blogger giveaway, but we have new books to give away thanks to Charles Hodgson of one of my favorite podcasts, Podictionary. Our blog of the week is Ross E. Lockhart's live journal, Hairs Rock Lots. Hey, you think that's an anagram? In a post called Reading Material, he talks about Aliens Want Our Women. He thought it ended too abruptly. And that week's pseudopod story as well. Thanks, Ross. I left you a comment, and I'd love to send you a copy of Charles Hodgson's new book, Carnal Knowledge, A Navel Gazer's Dictionary of Anatomy, Etymology, and Trivia. It's a fascinating exploration into the words for all of our body parts, and I found it a really fun book to dip into and learn things in spare moments. And remember, if you want your blog featured on Escape Pod, all you have to do is talk about us, and if you come up in my Technorati search when I roll my 10-sided dice, you win a book. Phew! Our music is by permission of Daikaiju at daikaiju.org. And that was our show for this week. Our closing quotation comes from Nicholas Negroponte, founder of the One Laptop Per Child Project, who says, "If you take any world problem, any issue on the planet, the solution to that problem certainly includes education. In education, the roadblock is the laptop." We'll see you next week. Have fun.